And so now we move into that time of listening to God, who has celebrated his presence. Now let's listen to his voice. As you probably know, for a number of weeks now, we've been exploring God through the eyes of, or we've been exploring friendship with God through the eyes of a number of well-known Old Testament characters. But today, for a change, we're going to change things slightly, and we're going to spend the next few weeks looking in depth at one of my favorite Old Testament characters. And that is Hezekiah, who is king of Judah. Now, as you can probably gather by the title king, he was the leader of the people. And so the question we're going to be exploring today is, what makes a good leader? And it'd be nice, you know, just to ask that question of yourselves as we go through the passage today. What makes a good leader? I think it's always a good question to ask. And it's particularly a good question to ask now when you think of all the things that are going on in our world today. So what is a good leader? What makes a good leader? Is it wisdom? Is it guile? Is it strength? Is it diplomacy? Is it the ability to make a good deal? Is it the quality of being trustworthy and honest? What makes a good leader? Is it the ability to be popular and have a good image and a great presence? Is it doing the right thing, whatever the personal cost? Is it serving yourself? Is it serving your people? What makes a good leader? Hezekiah was a king in Judah in the 7th century BC. So you can just work out how long ago that was for yourselves. It was certainly well over 2,000 years ago, nearly 3,000 years ago. And yet, the sort of questions I've been asking are just as relevant for today as they were for his day. A bit of background before we look at the chapter. The chapter we're looking at is, well, it's the first 16 verses of the second book of Kings, chapter 18. And it is on page number, if you're going to follow this in the Pew Bibles, you need to start on page number 389. And I'm going to be reading it in three chunks today because it falls into three parts. So this is Hezekiah, king of Judah, episode 1, part 1. Episode 2 is next week. A bit of background. Moses rescues the Israelites from Egypt. He leads them through the promised land, through the desert to the promised land. And for the following few hundred years, they are ruled by judges. People who God raises up, people who make judgments and decisions and guide them and lead them. And the last of those judges was someone called Samuel. And Samuel, in Samuel's day, by then the Israelites, they'd fairly settled down and fairly prosperous, and they looked round about them and they saw that the other nations had kings. So they thought, well, we want one of them. We don't want people looking down on us, we want a king. And Samuel warned them, said, okay. And God wasn't all that pleased. But nevertheless, they got their king, and they got King Saul, and he didn't make a very good job of it. And so God got Samuel to anoint David. And David was the greatest king of Israel. During his time, the borders of Israel expanded like they never before. And with a few hiccups, he tended to rule justly and faithfully. His son Solomon didn't do quite as well. He was very wise, but he had his weaknesses. And by the time it came to David's grandson, Rehoboam, things were really beginning to fall apart. And there was real division, civil war, strife, and this whole land of Israel was split into two. In the north, you had the kingdom of Israel. It kept the name, and its capital was Samaria. But in the south, you had the kingdom of Judah, and its capital was Jerusalem. And Hezekiah is a king of Judah. And this is a few hundred years later. And the big threat to people by now is the Assyrian Empire. The Assyrians were growing in power, and they were swallowing up all the kingdoms round about them and getting bigger and bigger and bigger and demanding tribute and demanding vassals. And if you want to find out about the Assyrians, you need to brush up on your, I'm not quite sure what language they spoke, possibly something like Aramean, and you need to go to the British Museum down in London, and there you'll find the scroll of Sennacherib, one of their kings. And he actually lived around about the time of Hezekiah. And you'll find out what they're like. And you'll find out that they're a wee bit like the Romans. Very sophisticated, very cultured, but brutal if you ever dared to oppose them. Cruel beyond measure. They thought nothing of wiping out whole nations. So that was the Assyrians. They'd been around in the time of Hezekiah's father. Hezekiah's father was King Ahaz. And we find out all about him in Chapter 16 of 2 Kings. Ahab wasn't a very good king. For a start, we're told that he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel to the north. And he even sacrificed his son in the fire. Well, obviously, he didn't sacrifice Hezekiah, but presumably it was his eldest son. And that was what people round about them did. So he wasn't very different from the people round about him. And he wasn't very nice to his family. He followed the detestable ways of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He offered sacrifices and burned incense in the high places to idols on the hilltops and under every spreading tree. So he wasn't a very good king, or he certainly wasn't a very godly king. And if you read chapter 16, you'll find that it was Hezekiah's father Ahaz who actually opened the door to the Assyrians. Because Ahaz had fallen out with his neighboring kingdoms, and so he asked the Assyrians for their help in defeating his neighbors. And he offers them bribes to do that. Treasures from the temple. And it worked. I mean, the Assyrians were quite happy to help Ahaz defeat these people. And they swallowed up their kingdoms as well. But somehow in the process, they also swallowed up the kingdom of Judah. And they kept demanding tribute. And Judah becomes a vassal state of the Assyrian Empire. So all this happens in the time of King Hezekiah's dad, King Ahaz. And Hezekiah is 25 years old before he began his reign. So in those 25 years, he'd been watching his dad. And the question for us now is he going to be like him or is he going to be different? So let's find out. Let's have a look at 2 Kings chapter 18, and we'll just read the first 8 verses to start with. So Hezekiah, episode 1, part 1, here we go. In the third year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel, that's the kingdom to the north, Hezekiah, son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 29 years. His mother's name was Abijah, daughter of Zechariah. Hezekiah did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father David had done. Now, they don't mean his father was called David. They mean he was in the succession of David. So he was like David, the greatest king. Hezekiah removed the high places, smashed the sacred poles, cut down the Asherah poles, broke into pieces the bronze snake Moses had made, for up to that time the Israelites had been burning incense to it. It was called Nehushtan. And Hezekiah trusted the Lord, the God of Israel. There was no one like him among all the kings of Judah, either before him or after him. He held fast to the Lord and did not cease to follow him. He kept the commands of the Lord. The Lord had given Moses. And the Lord was with him. He was successful in whatever he undertook. He rebelled against the kings of Assyria and did not serve them. From watchtower to fortified city, he defeated the Philistines as far as Gaza and its territory. I get the feeling that when Hezekiah came to the throne of Judah, the whole nation of Judah breathed a sigh of relief because he wasn't like his father. We're told that he was a good king, that there's no other king like him before or after. So what can we learn from him? What makes a good leader? Well, we're told he was faithful. He held fast to the Lord. He did not cease to follow him. And he did something no other king before him since the time of David had had the courage to do. He destroyed the idols that were all in the high places that the people sneaked off to worship when they're meant to be worshiping in the temple. He got rid of all of those things. So for him, it wasn't just a personal faith. He saw the need for the whole nation to turn back to God, and he gave the lead himself. This was the God, remember, who had rescued them from Egypt, given them this land to live in. He turned their eyes back to this God who they tended to have forgotten. So that's one mark of a good leader. He was faithful to God. A second mark, we're told that he was obedient to God's law. So it wasn't just lip service he was paying. It wasn't just, I believe in God. He was showing it by the way he lived his life. And he lives his life according to the law of Moses, and he gets the people to live their lives according to the law of Moses. And to understand the significance of this, you need to know that when God gave the Israelites the law of Moses in the desert, he wanted them to be different. He did not want them to be like the nations round about them that had detestable practices and sacrificed their sons and did all sorts of things and oppressed people and abused people and exploited people. And he did not want Israel to be like that. He wanted Israel, if you like, to be a beacon of hope to the world, to show that when you follow God's ways, you do create a more just society, a place where strangers and where widows and orphans can feel safe and be protected against people who would exploit them or brutalize them or oppress them. And the essence of all that is the law of Moses. It's interesting that when you think of governments, even today, and you think of regimes that want to stay in power, the very first thing that goes is the law of that land. You know, the law might say a president can only be president for 2 terms. And then we hear of some president or others change that law so that he can stay for a 3rd term. You see what I mean? The first thing that goes is the law. It's either ignored or it's changed. And that's because the people who are in power are wanting to amass that power to themselves. They're wanting to amass wealth and influence to themselves. And in so doing, they're creating so many enemies that in the end they can't let go. But Hezekiah is not like that. He obeys the law of Moses, and his society becomes a just society, a beacon of hope to the surrounding nations. So he was faithful to God, he was obedient to God's laws, and from that we can deduce that in his mind the job of a leader is not to serve himself, it's to serve God and to serve the people. So that's the third mark of a good leader. They're not in it for themselves. They're not in it for their popularity. They're not in it for the kudos. They're not in it for their power. They're not in it for their influence. They're not in it for personal gain. They are there to serve others. And as a result, we're told Hezekiah gets off to a good start. He reasserts Judah's power. He breaks free of the shackles of the Assyrians. He drives them out. He no longer pays tribute. He even drives out the Philistines who've been encroaching on the lands. Unlike his neighbor, Israel, to the north, and unlike his neighboring king, Hoshea, who's also a vassal of the Assyrians. So what happens to Israel in the north? Hezekiah, episode 1, part 2. Let's go back to 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 9. In King Hezekiah's 4th year, which was the 7th year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel, Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, marched against Samaria and laid siege to it. What had happened was Hoshea, a bit fed up with giving away all his money to Assyria, had made an alliance with Egypt, and Shalmaneser had found out. And so now, that was it. Now he's getting his oats. Now it's really tough. Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, marched against Samaria and laid siege to it. At the end of 3 years, they held out for 3 years. At the end of 3 years, the Assyrians took the city. So Samaria was captured in Hezekiah's 6th year, which is the 9th year of Hoshea, king of Israel. And basically, that's the end of the kingdom of Israel in the north. The king of Assyria deported Israel to Assyria, settled them in Hala, in Gozan on the Habor River, and in the towns of the Medes. And then there's the explanation why this happened. This happened because they had not obeyed the Lord their God, but had violated his covenant, all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded They had neither listened to the commands nor carried them out. In other words, they had become just like all the other nations around them. There was nothing different about them. Nothing at all. They turned away from God. And this happened. And so we come to episode 1, part 3. We know, well, let me just give a wee background to this. And it's an important background. Hezekiah, meantime, down in Judah, was trying to be a good king. But it'd be a mistake to say that he was a perfect one. He got off to this great start, but he still has a lot to learn. A few more years pass. And it's easy to be a good leader when all's going well. It's really difficult to be a good leader when everybody's against you and you've got to make difficult decisions. In fact, it's when you're up against it that the temptation is the greatest for you to take your eyes off the God you've been looking to and start relying on your own judgment and your own wisdom. And that's exactly what now happens to Hezekiah. He starts off well, but then he takes his eyes off God. What's been happening over these years is he's found Judah is being increasingly isolated as Assyria swallows up more and more of his neighbors. And for 10 years, the Assyrians have been camped on his borders, waiting for their chance to strike. So it's quite hard to live with that thought all your time. And for 10 years, the brutality that they show to anybody who opposes them has been weighing on his mind. So gradually, his faith in God has been worn down. Here we go, verse 13. In the 14th year of King Hezekiah's reign, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, attacked all the fortified cities of Judah and captured them. So Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent this message to the king of Assyria at Lachish. I have done wrong. Withdraw from me, and I will pay whatever you demand of me. The king of Assyria exacted from Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. So Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the temple of the Lord and in the treasures of the royal palace. At this time, Hezekiah, king of Judah, stripped off the gold with which he had covered the doors and doorposts of the temple of the Lord, and even gave that to the king of Assyria. We know from the historical records that the Assyrians didn't just come straight for Jerusalem. They came down the coast, and before they turned inland towards Jerusalem, they fought a big battle with Egypt. Egypt had sent its army. Egypt was the other big power of the day. So there had been this big battle on the coast between Assyria and Egypt, and the Assyrians had won. So that's it. There's no other big cheeses left now. There's just Assyria. And now they turn and they head towards Jerusalem. And I can imagine what's going through Hezekiah's mind as they gradually defeat and break into and overthrow all the fortresses in his land until at last all that's left is Jerusalem. I can imagine his faith wobbling a bit by now. I can imagine him thinking things like, maybe now I need to be a bit more pragmatic. Maybe my father was right after all. You know, the best way to get rid of these Assyrians is just to pay them off. Maybe the right thing to do in the circumstances is to go down the route of appeasement. We've all heard that word before, haven't we? Maybe he's thinking, if I just take all the temple treasures and give it to these folks, there might be peace in our time. And so he does. All the treasures that built up over generations, all of Solomon's wealth, all handed over to the Assyrians. And of course, it doesn't work. It works in the short term, doesn't work in the long term. It's a bit like if you lived through the 30s, you know all about appeasement. Oh yes, Hitler can have Austria. Maybe he'll be happy then. Oh yes, he can have the Sudetenland. Oh, maybe he'll be happy then. Doesn't work. And all it does is whet the Assyrians' appetite, and it's not long before they're back for more. But in the meantime, there's been this humiliating climb down. There's apology. He has to admit he was wrong in standing up to them. There's the loss of all these temple treasures. And worst of all, in all this, he is conceding that his God is perhaps not as great as he thought he was. As I said, it doesn't work. It's not long before they're back for more. But the interesting thing about the story of Hezekiah, and this is why I like Hezekiah as a king, is the next time when they come back for more, Hezekiah has learned his lesson. But to find out what happens, you will have to wait till next week at episode 2. In the meantime, we just need to simply ask what we've learned today about good leadership. And I think this is what I've learned, certainly. Good leadership always has to be godly, relying not on your wisdom, but on God's wisdom, not on your strength, but on God's strength. That is good leadership. It's leadership that admits weakness, if that means relying on God. A second thing, it needs to be based not on what you believe, but on how you live. You've got to lead by example. You can't just say one thing and do something else. That is good leadership. A third thing, it's got to be based on this understanding that the aim of the good leader is not to be popular, not to build up their own strength, not to build up their own influence. The aim of the good leader is to serve God and to serve others. And if you think about it, who is the perfect leader? Who in all of history is the one who does all of these things? And there is only one, and his name is Jesus. The model good leader who lives out his life just as he preaches it and lives not for himself but lives for others. And in so doing, he's showing his followers that there is a different way to live, and it's the way of grace. So those are the lessons we learn. But I want to finish with some words of challenge, because you may well have been listening carefully to what I've said. I mean, you may not have been listening at all. You may have been fast asleep. But you may have been listening to what I have to say, and you've been thinking, this is really interesting. I've been learning all about ancient history and about Assyrians and conquests and intrigues and the kings of Judah. And you may have been thinking, but none of this is really relevant to my life because I'm not a leader. And if that's been you, then now you need to sit up and listen very carefully to what I have to say. Anyone who is a follower of Jesus, by definition, is a leader of others. You cannot be a follower of Jesus without leading others. You just cannot do it. You cannot be a Christian if you're not leading others, because there will always be those who look to you for your wisdom and your guidance and your example. Just think for a minute of the people who look to you for your example, your wisdom, and your guidance. They may be people who are related to you. They may be your children. They may be your parents. They may be your brothers and sisters. They may be the people you work alongside. They may be friends. We might be following Jesus. Other people will be following us. We are all leaders. As Christians, we are all called to lead, and we are called to lead in the manner that we are being led by Jesus. We are called to lead by demonstrating a faith in God who loves us and living that out in everything we do. We're called to lead by seeing everything we do as being in the service, not of ourselves, but of others. And that might mean standing up for what's right. And that might mean protecting the weak and the vulnerable. It's all part of leadership. And a final thing needs to be said, and we learned this from King Hezekiah, but not this week. But I still think it's an important point need to be said. Now, think of it as a preview. We all need to be humble in our leadership. It's not, oh, I'm a leader. It's, oh dear, I'm a leader. You know, it's a responsibility, and we cannot do it in our own strength. And there will be times when we get it wrong, just like Hezekiah got it wrong. It takes strength to admit failure. It takes courage to admit weakness. But all these things are the marks of a good leader. So a question. We've been talking about faith lived out in lives. We've been talking about living for the service of others. We've been talking about humility. Are all these things the marks of our lives? Are they the marks of our lives? I mean, I know none of us are perfect. But with God's help, we should all be striving to be perfect. I know we'll never get there. But that is what we should be striving for. That is our calling. That is our challenge. Because we are called to follow Jesus. And we're called to do it not in our strength, but in His. He is the author and perfecter of our faith. He is the one in whom we trust. Shall we pray? Loving God, we thank you for Hezekiah, the good king who tried his best and messed up, but ultimately his faith was in you. Thank you for all that you did through him, and thank you for his example for us. And thank you for the other good leaders, the people who've led us in our lives down through the years. We thank you that the true leader, the greatest leader of all, is Jesus. So help us to try to be like him, that we might lead others to you. We ask this for Jesus' sake. Amen.